going to kick off this hour with technology and look at some of the latest technology news, some of the gadgets you may have been given or something you might want to go and buy in the sales. And if you've got a tech question of any kind, something maybe that you can't get to work, maybe it was a gift, a Christmas stocking gift, and you're not sure how to work it. We had a question yesterday, and I'm not sure we totally got the answer, so I'm going to go with that question as well. And here to answer your questions is Fevzi Turkalp, who joins us. He's editor of GadgetDetective.com, joins us now. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning to you.
You've come up with a little list of great gadgets that people might want to go out and spend some of their Christmas money on if they've got some. So we're going to look at some of those. And also, let's encourage people, you can phone. It's best if you phone, isn't it? Because then we can put a few extra questions to you.
Yeah, helps me diagnose what's going on if I can ask
a couple of questions. Yeah, it's good if you can put the question and on the phone. So that's 0345 6060 973. But equally, it being a tech phone in as well, people often use the technology. So they text 84850. You can tweet at LBC. You can email via the website as well. If you have a question, and don't think that it might be too dumb a question as well. We prefer those ones. The easy ones are the best ones, really. So 0345 6060 973. Let me ask you first of all about smart speakers, because this is something that came in yesterday. We had a lot of people on Boxing Day, as it was yesterday, who had got new smart speakers. Yes. And they were struggling to actually listen to LBC on them and were trying to work out how to do it.
Yes, well, I mean, it varies a little bit with each one, but it can be as simple as saying, you know, play and then the name of the station, which I won't say now because it will set up a feedback loop for some people. It should be quite straightforward. Some stations, LBC isn't one of them, but some stations require you to link up via the app first. But it's really just a question of making sure that the device has access to the internet in the first instance. So you've got to be able to, normally it's set up via an app on your smartphone where you put in your Wi-Fi password and so forth, and it sets it up. It will default to a particular wake word, which is the word that precedes anything that you say to it. So the way these smart speakers work is that they are always listening to you, but they don't do anything with what you say until they hear the wake word. Then they make a recording of what you say directly after that. They send it off to the computer in the cloud, run, you know, be it Amazon's or and Android or Google's and also so forth. But it will then work out the answer there and then send back a recording of the answer. So actually, smart speakers are dumb speakers. They're kind of message takers that send it off and wait for the answer to come back from there.
So the person who texted in with an Apple HomePod Mini,
okay,
they definitely should have been able to get this LBC.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, yep. You can. It's just a question.
Just getting the wording.
Yeah, so you'll set it up on the app on your device, be it, you know, iPad or iPhone, and you know the problem may be as simple as you haven't set up the internet access. I mean, forgive me if you have, but that's the first step because nothing's going to work.
Well, she was getting LBC News, which is our sister station, but not getting LBC this one.
Okay, well, I access LBC on various smart speakers and it works well, and it does differentiate between LBC and LBC News. So,
excellent. So it's certainly
possible. Yeah, yeah.
Can you change the wake word from the official ones,
all know? So with Alexa, you've got limited choices. For example, Alexa is the default. I think you can also change it to computer, after which you can say tea, Earl Grey hot, and actually it does know the answer to that one as well. But yeah,
so you can't just pick one and say, you know, Boris is my wake word.
No. I wish you could.
Boris, make me some tea.
Yeah. You see, all of the wake words have to be reasonably rare in normal speech.
Ah. Yes, of course.
You know, if you've got a child named Alexa, though, you're in trouble.
Aren't Boris,
you?
It'd be firing off all the time, wouldn't
it? Yeah, well, it would be, wouldn't it? It has to be a bit rare. But I would like to see that come. And I think that if the devices get a bit smarter in understanding the context of what we're saying, it should be able to differentiate between, say, the word Boris used in a appropriate sentence, or Boris as the wait word followed by an instruction or a question.
Okay, here are some questions coming in already. Thank you for these. Here's one for you, Fevzy. Steve says, please would you ask your guest which he thinks is the best browser to use for Windows?
Okay, it's a good question. I prefer Firefox, and it depends what your criteria are for best. Chrome is very good, technically very good, and it's compatible with a lot of services that you may need to access. However, Chrome is built by Google, and Google make their money out of collecting data about you. So they already collect data on every search you do in the Google search engine. I really don't want to share my internet history and everything else with them. Firefox, however, is done by a not-for-profit foundation that makes Firefox. There is actually, it's not available yet, but you may have heard of a search engine called DuckDuckGo. It's a bizarre name.
Yeah,
it's bizarrely named.
That one now.
Picking up traction. Yeah, I'd say it's sort of 80-85% as good as Google in terms of getting the results that you want. So I use that as my default search engine. I'll tell you why I'm saying this in a minute. I use it as my default search engine. Only in that sort of 10% or so of cases where I don't get a sufficiently good answer, then I'll consider using Google. But I really don't want to share my history with Google. DuckDuckGo have said that they're building their own browser as well, which will be very interesting because their whole thing is privacy. So they make a big deal about the fact that they don't log your searches. And therefore they can't monetize them because they don't actually record what your searches are. So I would say, Firefox on PCs, and consider Safari, which is a default browser if you're a Mac user.
Okay, let's take a question from John in Cheshunt. Hello, John.
Hi,
what would you like to say?
I'm trying to can you tell me, I've had a sat-nav, but it's in my car. It's a radio one. And it's a Garmin, and I'm wondering how I could add voices to it, because if I had one of those ones that you can just fit to the windscreen, I would be able to update it. But the one in the car, I just can't seem to work out how to add the voices to it.
You mean when it speaks to you in different voices?
Yeah, like you can get sat-navs, you can get celebrity voices added and things like that.
Right. Okay. You can do it. Again, it's through the app. I don't think you can do it from the device itself. You have to download the Garmin app, and then you're able to set it up with all the defaults that you want. For example, what units of distance you want—is it kilometers or miles and so forth? And you can. I think some of the Garmin ones do support. I think they do things like scary voices and celebrity voices and things like that. So it should be possible. But usually, what you find, John, is that most of the function, or only the basic functionality, is available on the device itself, and the rest is from the app. And the app is also, important for setting up all the other settings that you want on it. So it's a good idea to do that. And if you wanted to update the software inside the sat-nav, that's usually done through the app as well. So one of the things you might want to do is update the maps. Or the actual application itself. So all of that would be through the app, and usually you can link via Bluetooth to the device. Sometimes you need to do it with a cable.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Here's another question. Can you ask if there's a good word processing app for an iPad Pro 2018, please?
It depends what you like. There is the basic ones that come with the iPad itself, which is, more than sufficient. To be honest, I use Notes, which is not a word processing app, but it has basic functionality in it. Mm. And Notes is kind of nice because on the latest incarnation of the iPad, you can pull up a quick note by just sliding from the bottom right-hand corner towards the middle, and a quick note pops up. And it's really quite nice because you can add... as you're browsing, if you're doing research, for example, as you're browsing the internet, you can add links into the note immediately from where you are, and it works very nicely. If you want something more sophisticated, Apple, again, have a suite of sort of office type applications that most iPads will come with. And I think it's called, is it called Write? I can't remember what they call their one. And then there are other ones that are unusual in that they're designed there's a couple that are designed to give you fewer distractions. So the problem with working on an iPad or a phone is that you get too many distractions. That's the problem. If you try and use your tablet as an e-book reader, for example, which it does a sterling job of that, but you keep getting notifications and so forth. And although you can use the focus settings these days, so you can tell it when you don't want to be disturbed, when you're driving, when you're at work and so forth, there are ones that, as you type on them, I will look up the name of this later because it escapes me at the moment, but as you type, each word that you type just appears in the middle of the screen. It doesn't even show you the whole sentence at once. And it forces you to focus, and it doesn't allow... the screen is otherwise blank, and it doesn't allow other things to intrude. But I don't think you have to spend, a lot of money on it. I think something like Notes or Write is fine. And then you can always copy it across to, a PC or something. You can easily share it. One of the nice things about iPads is, and Apple stuff is it's very easy to share documents and images and other data between devices and also by email out again. So I'm going to look up the name of that app.
Okay, we'll give you a moment to do that. We've got lots of questions coming in. We'll take some more questions in just a moment as well. So we're answering your tech questions with Fevzi Turkalp here. And just going back to the smart speaker issue. You've looked it up, have you?
Yeah, I just looked it up. So the one that I was grasping for was called Pages, which is part of Apple's.
Oh, Pages,
WorkSuite.
Yes.
Yeah. So Pages is available free from the App Store. So I think that's a great place to start.
Good.
If however you're thinking, I need to share across to say a Windows PC, then you could consider taking an Office 365 subscription. So that's I don't really like subscriptions, I must admit, but it does seem to be the way things are going. Yeah. So you can subscribe to Office 365, and then you get the main Office apps on pretty much any internet connected device, including iPads and iPhones. So that's quite a good way of not having to change formats, to go from
Windows.
If you do. And then there's always Google Docs. Google Docs is good if you want to have collaboration with, so if you want different people to be able to contribute to the document and sometimes even see the changes happening in real time, then Google Docs is good for that if you don't mind the inherent privacy issues.
Now, going back to the smart speakers, Maggie says, it was me who texted in because I couldn't get LBC. I tried again and it said LBC is not on my Apple storage. I have the LBC app I've gone back to my Mini Google in desperation, as now using the Apple Mini is just for music. Now, and somebody else has replied. Mike says, regarding the problem with the smart speaker, playing LBC News instead of LBC, I found that saying play LBC UK or play LBC London was the answer, as that was what the station was called in the radio app. Don't know whether that sheds any light on it or not. But
sometimes these things are a bit, finickety, and you do sometimes need to experiment with the name that you use. But it is definitely available. I think I get it on all my devices just by saying play LBC. I will check. I'm normally listening on Alexa, and it
works no problem.
Yeah.
Well, lots of people have been saying an Apple HomePod definitely works as well.
It does. Yeah.
Right, let's take another call. Brian in Belfast. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Yes, I'm phoning up about. I'm thinking of purchasing a new OLED unit television.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the starting price is about £1,300.
Yeah.
For an OLED TV, I think that's the one that's got the self-lit pixels.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, I've heard though that there's a thing called Burnham.
Yeah.
On these TVs, I just wonder, is up there damaging to the TV screen or?
Yeah, you can get a sort of shadow permanently etched onto the screen. This is something that's particular to OLED technology. So there are different technologies that are used to build flat screen televisions. So the one's called LED, which is light emitting diode. Then there is the one that gives you the higher dynamic range, blacker blacks and whiter whites. That's called OLED or organic LED, and it has the benefit, as I say, of having a much brighter, much crisper image, much better dynamic range. But it does have this inherent problem that if you don't if you have a picture that doesn't, or parts of the picture don't change very much. So let's say you watch a news station, and it's always the same station that you're watching, and there's a lower third banner at the bottom that you know might have a you know, their clock and logo and so forth. The logo over you know, not immediately, but over a period of years could get burned in, and television manufacturers have now started building in sort of screen savers into their TVs to try and prevent this from happening. So at least when you're not actively watching, it doesn't burn in. But it can be a problem, and it is interesting to me that quite a few manufacturers seem to exclude screen burn-in from their warranties. And if you do get an OLED TV, and I would always say when you're spending that amount, it's worth investing a little bit extra and getting, let's say, a five-year warranty. You should check the terms of the warranty to see if it excludes these sort of burn-in issues. But it can be a problem. It's, you know, the modern ones are a bit less prone to it, but it does still happen, and you just need to be aware of it.
Would it put you off buying one?
I think the price puts me off buying an OLED TV right at the moment. I mean, I would rather have a good LED TV or LCD TV. You know, and Samsung do a technology called QLED, which is meant to sound like OLED or even look a bit like it, except the little bar across the O. It's not as good as OLED, but I just think, you know, bang for buck, I would rather have a bigger screen for less money than it would cost me to buy a large screen OLED. That's just me. I mean, the price has continued to come down, but it's not a perfect technology, and it's quite interesting. There are other technologies. For example, when Apple released the new iPad Pros, it actually kept away from OLED screens because it felt it wasn't quite ready for that form factor yet. They have it on some of the smaller devices, but the bigger devices tend to be more problematic.
Okay, Brian, thank you for that question. Henry has tweeted, how angry is Fevzi that ISDN lines are being phased out?
I've had a good run. I got my ISDN line when it was an alternative to a 56K dial-up modem. So I've had it a fair time. So ISDN is nowadays, it was a way of connecting to the internet back in the day. But nowadays it's most commonly used by contributors such as myself who want to connect to radio stations and don't want to sound like they're on a phone line. So what you get is you get two channels, 64 kilobits per second each, and you could bond them into 128 kilobits, and it was fantastic. Imagine now you get gigabit internet in some cases now. And but the advantage of this, the reason why it's still better in many cases than FaceTime and you know, Zoom audio and internet-based ones, is that all of those technologies are based on packets of data, not continuous. Imagine they're a bit like buses, and like buses, sometimes they get bunched up, and then there's gaps, and then sometimes you get stutter. So when you're Skyping, sometimes it stutters, and sometimes in FaceTime it stutters, because the voice is packeted up and sent in bits, and that's fine as long as there's a flow. With ISDN, it's different. It's a point-to-point technology. It's like a conventional phone call, and the bandwidth is guaranteed. It doesn't rely on packets that can vary. It's just digital data that's sent down the line. So it's a bit of a shame. I think I'll have mine for another 2 or 3 years before they kill it.
And that's what you're speaking on now.
Yeah, it is. And to be honest, BT have been threatening me with cutting this off for a long time, because it is really, really old technology. It just happens to work really well. And internet, audio isn't...
It's not quite as good.
Yeah, when it's good, it's better. Yeah, because you get fuller bandwidth, and you get less attenuation at certain frequencies. You know, you get a more natural sounding voice. I mean, for example, you wouldn't use ISDN to play music over it. I mean, you'd start noticing the limitations. But with speech, it's fine. I'm just going to hold on to mine for a bit longer. But I do have a sort of cupboard full of other technologies that I have ready to go. Yeah, and also don't forget that contributors are increasingly required to provide visuals as well these days, you know. And it's a great shame, because when I started in this business, I did it because I had what they call a good face for radio. and now the jig is up, because now I have to put my mush
on luckily,
camera.
We're not on video tonight, but but another time we'll do that. Jeff in Woking. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, good morning, Clive.
Morning.
I'm an LBC addict. I've been listening since September 1973.
Excellent.
And the smart speaker that I've got is probably the best thing I've ever bought.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be without it. I'm not very good with technology, but my neighbour set it up. I think it's done through Amazon.
Yes.
And I walk through the door and I just say, Alexa, play LBC, and in 2 seconds, there you are. Crystal clear, and the reception and the quality is fantastic. It's just a little speaker the size of a little Dutch cheese, you know?
Yeah.
And it's got a headphone socket. I can listen in stereo and headphones. And it's unbelievable. I mean, when I used to listen online, it was very hit and miss. You know,
yeah.
whether I could pick it up or not. And I pay a little bit extra. I think it's about £4 a month to get unlimited music from Amazon, which is very useful indeed. You know, music that I haven't got, I can just say, play this and play that. But all I say is, Alexa, play LBC. And she says, LBC from Global, I think she says.
Yes.
And it's there in a second, you know.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But I wouldn't be without it, Clive.
Yeah, they are amazing, actually, the way they work. And I think increasingly more and more people are listening to the radio that way.
Yeah.
Because it is just so easy. You don't actually need a radio anymore, do you?
No, well, it is a radio. It's just a radio. It's a radio that does a lot of other things.
I can get all the other stations up, but I only mainly listen to LBC.
Well, exactly. Why would you want to? Yes. Jeff, thank you very much. Very good point. Though, I do know lots of people, though, who shrink from that because they think, probably rightly, that this little device must be listening to you all the time, waiting for you to say that word or your wildest wish.
Yes.
But they feel, and I feel a bit like that, really, that it could be spying on you.
Yeah, it could. I mean, I'll say two things about this. If you're worried about that, you also have to get rid of your smartphone and your tablet.
Right? Oh, dear.
Because that's got a camera on it and a microphone on it and an internet link. And if you're worried about that, then, you know, you should be consistent and junk your smartphone as well. The other thing I would say is I did test Amazon Echo units. I tested a number of them, and I was monitoring the internet traffic to and from the unit whilst I was giving it different instructions and whilst I was just speaking. And in brief, when I was speaking but not saying the wait word, nothing was leaving the machine to go down other than the sort of the housekeeping it normally does. Nothing relating to what I was saying was leaving. So you're right, technically it must always be listening, otherwise how would it know when you said the wait word? But what it's doing is it's got a little memory buffer that holds a few seconds, and it says, is this a wait word? No. Is this a wait word? No. Is this a wait word? Yes. I'll now record what follows. Excuse me. What follows? I'll pick up on what follows, and then I will send that, as I say, away for processing. So it is listening technically, in that the microphones are live, and it's got enough intelligence to just determine whether what you've said is the wait word or not. But if it isn't, it discards it. It runs. It's overwritten in the buffer continually.
Right. Okay. Please ban people from saying that word beginning with A on the radio. All hell breaks loose. Apparently it does, yes. I don't know. I haven't got one of those. But, yeah, we'll be careful with the wake words. I mean, wake words at this time of the morning. Right, Peter, thank you. We're going to take some more calls in a moment. 0345 6060973 if you've got a question for Fevzi. Fevzi Turkalp joins me from gadgetdetective.com. You can also follow him on Twitter. And if we get to the end of the hour and we haven't managed to answer all the questions, you can tweet him as well, and I'm sure you'll do your best, won't you?
Yes, absolutely, of course, always.
And you
I'll be on Twitter for about 45 minutes after three.
Okay. At Gadget Detective. We'll take some more calls shortly then. Thanks. Stay with us, Fevzi. Great to see lots of interesting questions coming in. Nick says, the caller saying has been listening to LBC since September 1973, but LBC started broadcasting on the 8th of October 1973. I did think that, but I didn't point it out. But I think maybe there
test
were
broadcast.
A test broadcast. There was the test music, wasn't there, running, I believe. So I think that's probably what he was listening to. It was actually very popular, the test music. And good morning, I'm Clive Bull. With me is Fevzi Turkalp from GadgetDetective.com, and we are answering your technology questions at the moment. You can call in with a question, 0345 6060973. You can text 84850, and you can tweet at LBC. Here's a question for you, Fevzi. Jacqueline in Watford says, can Fevzi recommend a camera for a young person aged 17 who's very interested in photography, please?
I'm throwing these at you without any prior warning. I sigh because this, we're in a transitional period at the moment, away from cameras as we think of them and towards smartphones. So certainly the sort of sub £150 market for cameras has been wiped out by smartphones. Even fairly basic smartphones have got reasonably good cameras on them now. And when you combine that with the fact that what they lack in the size of the sensor, which is the thing that captures the light once it comes through the lens, they make up through the processor being able to improve the picture beyond what the lens on its own would be able to do. So I am tempted to say that the joy of a smartphone is that once you've taken the picture, you can then, you've got it on a beautiful large screen on the smartphone, and then you can manipulate it to your heart's content. And younger people tend to like sharing their images, and therefore you're not having to connect a cable or Bluetooth it out of a conventional camera into a computer internet connected device, and therefore be able to share it. So I would say, you know, depending on how much you want to spend. I mean, think of the smartphone itself. However, if the person is interested in photography and wants to learn more about photography, then I would say one of the earlier Sony RX100 series, because it's a small camera. It's not much bigger than a deck of playing cards. It doesn't have interchangeable lenses. If you want that, you can go for an entry-level Sony DSLR would be a good choice, because there's a lot of third-party lenses available for them, and they've really got good
sensors. Sony DSLR?
Yeah, so digital single lens reflex. So we used to talk about SLRs as being the larger cameras, and
where you can actually look through the lens.
Yeah, you look through the lens because there's a mirror. So the mirror allows you to look through the prism down, hits that and looks out the lens. And the benefit of those was always that what you saw was what you got, in that there was no offset where the viewfinder was offset from the lens. And therefore, when something got close, you'd get what's called parallax, where, you know, you weren't actually photographing what you thought you were. So SLRs were that. DSLRs were when film was replaced in these cameras, still the same gubbins, but replaced with a sensor instead of that. But I would say, it really depends. There's these different categories now. There's compact cameras. So a Sony RX100 would be a good example of that. And I think there's about seven generations, but the earlier ones are cheaper and still very good. Yep. So there's compact cameras. Then there are, at the top end, there's the digital SLRs that I've mentioned, and they tend to be very large because you need a larger body in order to have that sort of mirror mechanism. And then in between the two, which I'm very fond of, are what are called mirrorless cameras. So these are cameras that are halfway in size between the compacts and the digital SLRs. And the benefit that they have is they still have interchangeable lenses. I think I've got a Sony Alpha 5100 and a Sony Alpha 6400, which is great. Just depends how much you want to spend. So you have the benefit of interchangeable lenses. You have a good size sensor on it, more larger than the ones that you get on the compacts and more comparable to the larger cameras, but they're still reasonably small in size, and you have full manual override on them as well. So you could consider that, but bear in mind, I mean, for a good mirrorless camera, you're talking about £400 plus. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, but it depends, because most of the cost of for photographers goes in the lenses, the camera body, which is the bit sans the lens. It's a one-off expense, but you can keep adding lenses of different sorts to get more variety and more flexibility. And then in a few years' time, when you want to upgrade the body, as long as you choose a compatible one, you keep all your lenses. I've still got lenses from back when Minolta was making SLRs, and then Sony bought Minolta's technology. And so the mount of these 30-year-old Minolta lenses still works on a modern...
Do they?
Sony. Yeah,
that's
they do.
Interesting.
They absolutely
okay,
do
so
work.
If you've got lots of old lenses, they might potentially still work on a modern digital camera.
Yeah, and you can you can do that. You can even get adapters and get, you know, these old, you know, there's a whole thing where people buy these really old vintage, you know, Zeiss lenses from, you know, 70 or 80 years ago in some cases, and they get an adapter, and all right, they don't have the autofocus and everything, but you get the joy of this really beautiful glass, you know, the lens on a modern camera, and it's a joy. So in short, having given you the long answer, don't dismiss the camera built into the smartphone that they may already have. Okay, and then use it with various apps and get the pleasure of that. If you want one with an interchangeable lens, then consider either digital SLR or a mirrorless, being smaller. If you want compact but still full manual override, then consider something like a Sony RX100.
Okay, let's go to Peter in Amersham. Hello, Peter.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Freddie.
Hi, Peter.
I've got a couple of questions that you'll probably find quite easy to answer. The first one is about the Amazon speaker, I won't say the name.
Yeah.
To set people off. I've currently got the basic ones, just avoiding the keyword myself, because I've set it to the sound that resonates. The problem I've got is, I've got one concern is privacy, so I use it with quite stringent settings. Mm-hmm. But the problem I've got is I work on wireless hotspots.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have an internet service. I use something called OpenWRT.
Mm-hmm.
And I jump onto hotspots, and then I use a hotspot account for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I find the latency with these speakers, and I find the speakers, I use them for routines, for light switches, because I'm less abled, so they're very useful for that.
Sure.
I've got plugs everywhere, and light switches have been changed, and things like that. So they're quite useful for that point of view. But this latency, I'm wondering if any of the better models, because it seems to me the whole of the intelligence is in the cloud. There's nothing in the device until you say the word, but it doesn't store any routines in the device, or doesn't seem to. I was wondering if any of the better models do.
Yeah, so latency could be to do with the internet connection, and some of the better models have got better antenna in them.
What does that mean, latency?
Okay, so that's the delay between when you say something or do something and when it reacts to what you've said.
Right.
So so thanks for that. Yeah. So, but that latency is often caused by the internet connection, but that's not completely unconnected to the device that you're using to connect wirelessly, because all of these devices, I think almost without exception, they all have to be connected via Wi-Fi. I'm not aware of one that allows you to put an Ethernet cable into it, which would be ideal, and I'm not really sure why that is. But as I say, some of the higher end Amazon Echo devices, if we're talking about, for example, have got better antenna, and they're able to give rise to a more stable, reliable, and faster connection. Yeah. So there is that. The other thing that you get with the better smart speakers is you get a better microphone array. So these devices typically don't just have one microphone, they have a number of microphones, and they do something called beamforming. So when you speak to it, it works out from the volume of your voice on the different microphones, it works out which area of the room you're speaking from, and it pays particular attention to that. It's like it forms a listening beam to you. So one of the difficulties may be if it's not hearing you very well, it will make mistakes, and sometimes that can even cause additional delay. The other benefit that you tend to get is you get a better quality speaker within it. And if you're just using it as a control device to control lights and other smart Internet of Things devices, that's not very important. But if you're listening to music, it's certainly worthwhile, although another way around that is to connect either a wired connection or a wireless connection to a Bluetooth speaker and then deal with the problem that way. But I would say that it is sometimes worth paying a bit more. The other thing is, if we're talking about Amazon devices, like all the other Amazon devices, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. And although I can tell you in theory, this one might give you a better connection, you know, it's going to really depend on the device in your home with your internet and the way that you set up your, you know, your open WRT and so forth. So I would say, if you've got, you know, if you can time it correctly, buy it on your credit card, go for a higher end device from Amazon if that's the ecosystem you're in, set it up and try it, and then be able to return it within 30 days. If you time it right, you can even return it and get your refund if necessary before the money's even left your credit card account.
Okay, and quickly if you can, what was the other question, Peter?
Well, yeah, the second question was about something called a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
What's the kind of the best thing to use that for? Because I can't use it for OpenWRT because that I've needed to get a top-end Netgear for from eBay because the whole idea was that was to grab a hotspot and retransmit it. So the problem, I think that's where the problem is. But with the Raspberry Pi, I've got as a kind of hobby thing, I could use it for Plex, but I don't think it's going to be strong enough. What's another good thing to use that for?
I think they're quite good to, yeah. So just to explain, a Raspberry Pi is a British computer on a card about the size of a credit card, and it's got a basic computer on it with an amount of memory, and it can, you know, you can connect external drives and keyboards and things to it, and you can run a operating system which is a bit like Linux. There's various ones that you can run on there, but it's a basic thing, and it's a really good tool for education. It's great for younger people or people who want to just tinker with technology. It's not for people who are not interested in the tech. If all you want to do is, you know, word process, then you wouldn't buy a Raspberry Pi, although it can do it, because you have to connect a mouse to it, you have to connect a keyboard and a screen, and it's all a mess. It looks like a bunch of electronics. I would say one of the best things to Raspberry Pis with is robotics. If you were at all interested or want to get into making a robot or you know, having this thing run a program, simple or otherwise, and there are artificial intelligence programs on there. Oh, and by the way, you can make your own smart speaker using a Raspberry Pi. There's open source software, that's to say non-proprietary software, that actually allows you to run and create your own smart speaker. And that's kind of fun, particularly if you're worried about privacy.
Okay, lots of ideas there. Peter, thank you. We'll take some more calls in just a moment. LBC 245. And Fevzi Turkalp is with me. We're answering your tech questions. And I don't know whether it's because it's the day after Boxing Day, but we've got a lot of questions. I don't think we're going to get through all of them. But the good news is that Fevzi is coming back for a second go with a New Year special next weekend. So if we don't get your call or your question, then it's Sunday morning, same time, in just under a week's time, when we will also, we haven't been able to get around to the gadgets you wanted to recommend, Fevzi, but we'll do that then as well. We'll look at some of the gadgets of the year. But let's take some more calls then. And here's Olivia in Waltham Forest. Hello, Olivia.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Let me try and get it together. I've got a Google account. This is to do with emails. I've got a Google account, and I used to always use the Google. Now, since I went over to my new email address, is my name at AOL.com, but I keep getting the old emails up on the Google account. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't really, does it?
Understand what you're saying. So
I had a Google account, mm-hmm. and I always use Google.
Don't tell us your address. We've dumped that bit.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
So you've got two. You've got an old email and a new one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what's the problem?
So I keep getting the one from my old email, right. And I don't want that email anymore. I want the new one.
Oh, okay. Right.
So, Olivia, what's important to understand about both these types of email accounts is that they're called webmail. So they are most commonly accessed through the website, the Gmail website or the AOL website. Often with a browser, it will start with your default web page, which in your case might be Gmail, or it may be coming up because it's one that you visit often. So bear in mind, it's just a web page, and all you need to do is maybe open another tab in your browser or just overwrite the gmail.com address and put in the AOL one. Once you've done that, you will have to, you know, at least the first time, type in your email address and password. You can elect to allow the browser to remember the password, although there are security implications of doing that. But it should be as simple as just making sure that you're looking at the appropriate page. The Gmail account will, if you know, unless you've actually closed the account, you know, the Gmail will still exist. And typically, the emails are stored on the servers of Google or AOL. Sometimes you can do it with what's called an email client, where you can actually download the emails onto your device, your computer or your tablet. But essentially, I think your issue is most likely to be you're just looking at the wrong web page. It's defaulting back to gmail.com, and you need it to go to the AOL one.
Oh, God.
it's not so bad, because I mean, you know, it's just a question of go to AOL.com instead of gmail.com.
I do that.
And can you mentioned just closing the Gmail account, can you do that? Is that one way of doing it?
Yes, but I wouldn't recommend doing that. I think I would keep that, because you might have used that Gmail address for some service or other.
You might want to go back and check something.
Yeah, and also, by the way, it's quite useful to have two email accounts on different providers. One goes down, the other one's. But also, when you sign up for services, you can often provide a secondary email address for that service, so that if, let's say, you forget your password, one of the ways that they validate that you are who you say you are is that they can email you a reset link to the alternate password. So if you've forgotten the password for your AOL account, but you set up the Gmail account as a secondary email, then let's say you've forgotten your AOL password, they can reset it for you using the Gmail one. So I wouldn't, if you haven't shut it down already, I would keep it. I would also say to you that although I have great criticism of Google when it comes to privacy, but it's very interesting, because the more privacy you give up, the better the service. So, for example, Gmail has probably got the best spam filter in the industry. Why? Because they scan the contents of everyone's email, including yours. So they know how to interpret contents of email, and they can differentiate spam from non-spam. So it's got a really good spam filter. I know people who use the Gmail account as a spam filter. They filter the incoming email through it and back into their non-Gmail inbox, just for the benefit of the spam filter, which is on Gmail excellent.
Interesting. Okay, here's a question from Connie in Stockwell. She says, hi, Clive, could you please ask Fevzi, I've always wanted to know, how come a speaker, a loudspeaker, sounds better if you put the speaker on the floor?
Yeah, it's to do with, because when you listen to a speaker, you're not just listening to the sound coming directly from the cone in your direction. That sound is bouncing off a lot of other surfaces. So one of the things that you do, and particularly for bass frequencies, you put speakers in the corner, because it reinforces the waves that go backwards, bounce back, and form a fuller sound. In a similar way, when you put it on the floor, I don't know if it's better, it's different. It might be less accurate, but it will give you a more fulsome sound, because you've got the waves that are then going down, hitting the floor and bouncing up towards you. So you do have a slight delay, and it gives rise to a fuller sound. But some hi-fi purists wouldn't like that, and that's why they tend not to put them on the floor. They tend to put them on stands at ear height. That's meant to be where a speaker it really is. It should be at the listener's ear height.
Right. Let's see if we can squeeze in a quick question with Reuben in Leytonstone. Hello, Reuben.
Hi, morning. Just wanted to ask quickly. I run my own business, and I tend to ask all my customers whenever they come and collect their second cake or whatever to leave me a review, yep, or even the first cake, and via Google reviews. And what I tend to find is that with some customers, some clients, when I send them the Google link, the review for Google, it tends to just stay stuck on the sign in page, and it's quite frustrating, because some customers actually do want to leave a review and they can't, because they can't sign in, and you know, I try to be cheeky and use Google Maps, for example, to do it via there, and it still doesn't let people leave the reviews via Google Maps. So via Safari doesn't let you do it. It's just, is there any way around this? Any other suggestion you could say to get this done?
It might be that the instance of the URL, the web link that you've got, is specific to your session. So sorry if this sounds a bit technical, but essentially when you log on to a service itself, you can have the first bit of the web address can be standardized, but the rest of it may be specific to your session. And then when you share that latter part of the web address, the URL, can mess them up and then take them to a home page rather than the sort of deep down page that, you know, the specific page you wanted to take them through. One way around it would be to use a service like Bitly, bit.ly, and that will give you a shortened form, and it will tend to strip.
Say that again, sorry.
Bitly. So there are this is a service.
Bitly.
Bit.ly. Bit.ly. Yeah.
Okay. Bitly.
And the main function of that is to allow you to share much shorter URLs, much shorter. So you know how a web address can go on forever. You know, it could take you 2 minutes to type a full web address. What it does is you pop the web address into their website, and out pops a bit.ly/, and then a very short URL, a very short email address. And what that tends to do sometimes, it strips out the extraneous material and sends them. You could just try that as an experiment. The other thing is, speak to the service that you're using for the reviews, but you know, be it Amazon Reviews or whatever it is. Speak to them, because this will be an issue that they will deal with, or look at their FAQ page, because it may be a problem that's specific to their service and the way that it works. You know, websites are constructed in different ways, and sometimes don't take kindly to people linking at a deeper level into the web page.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Cheers, Ruben.
Thank you for that. Quick one here on text. Is there an easy way to download and keep YouTube videos?
Well, yes, there is. The easiest way is to pay for
is
YouTube
to pay
premium.
Them. Yes.
Yeah. And look, I wouldn't recommend this for a moment, okay? But I have heard that people sometimes sign up for YouTube and other premium services using a VPN, which is a virtual private network, to appear as if they're in another country and sign up for much, much less. And I think, I forget what YouTube charged, but I think in some countries it's like a fifth of the price. So there is that. And then there are a plethora of third-party applications which can download, and in fact those can be preferable in this way: the downloads that you're allowed from YouTube premium service do stay on your hard drive, and therefore can be replayed when you don't have an internet connection, which can be very useful. But if the YouTube video is deleted, your copy of it is rendered useless, which kind of is half the point of having your own local copy. One part is not having to have an internet connection. The other part is that it's that you've got it forever, irrespective of whether it gets taken off YouTube. Because videos do get taken down. People close their own channels, or, you know, they get copyright struck or whatever it is. So, there's a variety of programs that can do that.
Well, we've run out of time. As I suspected, we haven't got through half the questions. But Fevzi will be on Twitter at Gadget Detective for a little while. And also, you will be back with us in just under a week's time for a New Year special, when we'll look at some of the gadgets of the year. And we'll take more questions as well. So, in the meantime, Fevzi, thank you very much indeed. We'll look forward to speaking to you again very soon.